Alejandro, 3, 10, 9. Action. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
How is everything, man?
Doing good, man.
I like your comedy. I like every bit of content that you put out, and I enjoy it for a long time. And I just wanted to get a chance for you to come and be a guest and hang out with me, and we'll kind of get to know each other and hopefully become friends.
All right, I'm down.
So. So immediate first impressions, because I don't normally ask people that right off the bat. Immediate first impressions when you are asked to do this show, when you start checking out the show, or like if you like maybe heard of me through Nate or anything like that, because I had Nate on the show. That's how I discovered you, because you started doing stuff with Nate, like, and I had just had him on the show. And I was just scrolling through his things. And I was like, this stuff is fun. This stuff is so fun and so funny. And I think everybody should check it out. So back to the first question.
My first impression of you and this show.
Just being asked to be a part of it. Like any of that. Like what goes through your head of like when you prepare yourself for anything and everything, what do you prepare yourself for in a situation like this?
You know what? To learn from it, to get better at it. being a podcast guest is not the easiest thing. So a lot of times you look back on it and you think, oh, I was such an idiot. I sound like an idiot. I look like a moron. So I'm just doing this in the hopes that I get better at it.
Uh-huh.
So maybe today's the day that I nail it.
Experience is the best teacher, you know, as long as you keep getting out. Did you ever have your own podcast?
No, not really. No. Nate and I made some videos together. And we still might do some more of those. But a podcast proper, we just could never decide on what it was going to be about. It's like the impossible question. Like what is this, you know, because we were like, oh, we don't want to just, you know, BS around. We want to have like a theme to it. But then like all these people have all these very successful podcasts that are just them BSing around. So then we're like, well, maybe we should just do that. And then we just never decided.
Well, I mean, it's not impossible. It's not impossible to find what it is. You know what I mean? Whatever your niche is. Because like the thing is, like, nobody else is you, dude. Like, nobody else is Nate. Nobody else has got your views and perspectives on things.
Yeah.
Like, if you want something to create in this, to exist in this world, create the thing that you want to exist.
You got it. Yeah, absolutely.
I think for sure. I would subscribe. I think you got a funny light, man. I like the creativity that you guys share with each other. I mean, not necessarily saying that you'd have to start one with him. You could start your own thing.
Yeah, like, I could leave him in the dust.
Yeah, let's just eat my dust.
Yeah. That's what I'll call the podcast, Eat My Dust.
Yes.
That's where I start a podcast with all my friends and just leave them.
Have the gimmick of the show be like, oh, this is our brand new show that we're starting together. And and then be like, haha, sucker, you're not coming back for next show.
And I press a button, and then gone. That's great. See, the inspiration already has hit.
So what is what was the thing that, like, I know, like, so done to death, especially when you're talking about like stand-up comedy and you talk about all that kind of stuff. Like I normally say this to anybody who's a performer in some way. We have this like look at me hole, this attention seeking sort of like, everybody's got to hear what I've got to say. It's a rhetorical conversation where I can speak and you can listen, but you can't say anything or else I call you out and tell you to shut up or get you kicked out.
That's how it works.
What was it that like that you think maybe fueled that damage, maybe fueled that attention seeking?
I think it's just where I gravitated towards like the performing arts growing up as a kid, because mm-hmm. I was just a dramatic kid. And then I found a real home for myself in the arts and music wing of my high school. I would, you know, cut class and just hang out in the music room all the time. You know, I was in the band and the chorus and the drama club. So I was always doing stuff like that. And I think it was like my sort of like escape, you know, from the world of normies. And then having fallen into that sort of habit, it's just what I felt drawn to in my adulthood. And it was my ticket sort of out of my small town. After I graduated high school, I went to New York City because I thought at the time that I wanted to be an actor. I thought it was musical theater. But actually, it just turns out I was just gay. I was just gay and I wanted to live in New York City. And I just found the only thing that I could get myself there to do. So, yeah, it's always been this sort of thing of like I felt apart from, you know, my surroundings and wanted to work on something that was a little more intimate and special. And for me, that was music and performing.
Did you do training in improv or any of that? Or just well, did musical theater and then jumped right into doing stand up?
Well, I started with musical theater and then I moved on to ecstasy and ketamine. Well, pit
that,
stop.
How was that? That amused. There's a muse there. I mean, some people really think that's the path.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, I took a little pit stop to be a party kid and go clubbing and pretend I was popular with the ravers and all that city, New York City status party thing that was happening at the time. That was actually dying. It was like the dying gasps of the sort of club scene in New York was when I was there. So I did that for a while. I flunked out of musical theater school. I came home. I lived in my mom's basement for a while and I went to community college and I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I saw a poster for the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. So I was like, all right, you know, I figured I didn't want to do New York again. So, but I did want to do a city. So I moved to Philly in 2003, 20 years ago. And went to University of the Arts for film. And that wasn't even it. That wasn't even the final like iteration. Then I got my degree in screenwriting and narrative filmmaking and discovered very quickly that it was very expensive to make movies. And I was like, well, I still want to be creative, but I don't want to move out to California and I need to keep a low overhead because fundraising was definitely not one of my talents at the time or now. And that's where I finally fell into stand-up comedy in 2010.
Are you a fan of Mitch Hedberg?
Yes.
Like when he's like, I used to do drugs.
I still do. I used to too.
You're like, fundraising was not one of my strong suits. Still isn't. Wasn't no. Then either.
No, I'm not a money magnet. Yet.
So your favorite comics, like what was the, like, you're like, They have a role. I think I could fill somewhat of that. Like I could be a little bit of like sprinkle in this and sprinkle in that. What did you, sure. What was like your like main inspirations to get into comedy?
I would say I loved comedy more than I realized growing up. I really tuned into Comedy Central a lot in the 90s when I was a teenager and they had a lot of stand-up programming on Comedy Central at the time. And my favorite show was The A-List. That mm-hmm. at one time, I think, was hosted by, well, it was definitely hosted at one time by Sandra Bernhard. I think it was also hosted by Laura Keitlinger. So they were sort of my first introductions into the world of stand-up. I was always a huge, huge fan of Sandra Bernhard. Also a huge fan of Richard Lewis. No, I didn't even really care for Roseanne. How old are you, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm 39.
Okay, I'm 42. So yeah, same-ish era. So I did not watch Roseanne too much, but I did see a lot of Sandra Bernhard on Comedy Central because I was watching MTV or I was watching Comedy Central as a teenager, and I thought Sandra Bernhard was so sexy and funny and brave and confrontational and bitchy, and you know, I wanted to be that sort of oversized, like outsized character, and then Richard Lewis was so neurotic and overthought everything. Was he on Murphy Brown too?
Yes.
I did watch that with my mom. Yeah. So I really related to that sort of like that heavy neurosis. So I think those two were the first comics who sort of forged what I would become. Right. It was outlandish and neurotic.
There you go. I think it's kind of similar with me when like it was just like some like brash sort of like I think Rosie O'Donnell was the first comedian I ever saw. The first time I ever said I want to be a stand-up comedian was after I watched her do her show that she was doing on VH1. I must have been 9 or 10 or something like that.
But, yeah, she's funny. She's just naturally funny. Very charismatic.
And then the pro wrestling bug bit me.
So, well, there you go. I mean, that's a performer bug too. That is definitely dramatic.
I had no idea that I'd actually ever wind up getting good at it. Like, I just felt like it was something I needed to do. Like, I didn't think that I was a star or like that I was worthy of being some star in wrestling, like enough to like make a living off of it. Like, and maybe that's why I've never made a living. but like it came to me like later when I was like, oh yeah, I am kind of getting pretty good at this. Like, I think it came to like presentation, I guess, when you boil it down, like, 'cause I think the fact that I am not an expert at the technique on all these things doesn't mean everybody who's seeing it knows I'm not an expert on it.
There you go. You're selling it.
So like, yeah, it just wound up being like a more of a like present that I kind of know what I'm doing.
Is that your favorite part of it?
I think so. I think that there's so many favorite parts of it. Like, I think the entire, it's like the pros and cons section has way more pros to me than cons, even though there's tons of cons, but I just, I focus more on the pros there.
Yeah. The thing you love can definitely be also the thing you hate. If you do it long enough, you'll find things to hate.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, There's been some things about wrestling that are shameful and make me embarrassed. And I can't justify some of the actions of my people in wrestling.
Yeah. And the politics of it always is the pain in the ass in these communities, mm-hmm. which are like self-regulated communities, right? There's no outside no outside way to sort of settle things. You gotta figure it out between yourselves. And a lot of times that just means a lot of stuff just flies. A lot of people just get away with stuff because there's no one to tell them not to or that they can't.
Yeah. It's, the like the speaking out movement was like the Me Too movement of pro wrestling kind of happened during COVID, where people came out and they were like, hey, I've been too silent about this for too long and I got to come out and say all this stuff. And a lot of people got really exposed and I'm glad that happened.
Hell yeah.
But there is, you know, that makes me embarrassed. That makes me embarrassed. Like they misrepresent completely what I am and what I do. Like, I put so much pride in like presenting this business. And then someone comes along who's like a manipulator and insecure, and they, abuse people and get away with it because like they're like famous to people, you know, like they have like a little bit of, oh, this guy's got mystique to him. Like, well, you just think that.
I think that happens in music, happens in comedy. Yeah. And people, they have a cult of personality around them, and it really shields them from some accountability. So I just, it does make it harder to enjoy the thing because you got to worry about all these perceptions, you know, and sort of bad, getting a bad rap, you know. Certainly as a stand-up comedian,
Who do you think in popular culture and in media and comedy, who do you think got canceled that like maybe I don't really believe?
maybe should not have gotten canceled?
Right. Yeah.
Well, the only thing I can think of that I felt like conflicted about very recently is Al Franken.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely that was tough. What happened? I don't know if you remember what happened with him.
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah. I listened to him. He was on Pete Holmes' podcast, like right after.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I think he is a very super talented, very funny. I've loved him since I was a kid, and I love that he got involved in politics and, you know, became a representative. And I think he believed in the right things. And at the same time, you know, I also agree that, you know, the whole era of, you know, the what happened and what he did, and taking a photo of somebody when they were asleep and pretending that you were groping on them, like, it was just, it's kind of just so. On the one hand, it's so dumb and adolescent, but on the other hand, it's really just indefensible, right? So I felt deeply conflicted about that, because I was like, look, if I don't apply the same standard that, you know, we want to apply to everybody to this situation, then I'll, you know, then I'm a hypocrite, you know, then you don't have the integrity of it. So I mm-hmm. think that was sort of an unfortunate consequence that still nonetheless had to kind of happen, I guess. Just really sad, I guess. All right.
I guess it's like, you know, I try to think about having compassion or having grace or having forgiveness for moments when I go like, all right, I've had moments where I've been not perfect. I mean, I know that I'm not perfect, and I don't anticipate anybody else promising that they're going to be perfect. So
yeah.
Like sometimes when it's something like that, when somebody just took a picture or somebody just did, like, it's like a little more like you can see yourself kind of doing like boneheaded things like that as a youth, mm-hmm. for sure. I mean, not to say that he was a youth at that time. He was already Stuart Smalley.
He's already, he already had been that. Yeah.
Yeah. He already, Stuart had already saved the world at that
time. That's right. But, so yeah, so you do have this added, you know, when there's a spotlight on you, you do have to be more careful, and there's a little bit more responsibility when you're, you know, representing something bigger than just yourself as an individual.
And like, ooh. who knew that everything you do is going to come back to try to cancel you? Who knew that was going to happen?
Thank God. Oh gosh. I'm just glad there wasn't internet when I was, you know, a kid and all that stuff. And nothing from my high school was ever recorded or anything like that.
Yeah.
Cause I was not, you know, I was not as woke as I am today.
We made like videos. We made lots of offensive videos when I was younger. Yeah, we did some stuff that was maybe not the best. As far as like, like we were doing sketch comedy. So we were just like writing the most outrageous, like shock comedy, like shock ya kind of stuff. And maybe we didn't do the best on some. But I mean,
you live and learn.
Dude, I still stand by. We did a sketch. I totally didn't look like this. I was a real skinny young boy, and we did a fake movie trailer for like a Fast and the Furious type thing, except for it was me and my best friend dressing up in drag and racing on a racetrack, and we called it drag race.
Wow, how serious was this drag? How all out did you go?
No, it was not all out. I went to the thrift store and I bought a flapper dress, and I like, I put like really bad makeup. There was no hair and makeup. It was just us dudes who were trying to be funny.
How'd the other guy look? Which one of you look better?
Probably him. He probably looked more like a lady. I look like just some dude with my hair. Like I put a ponytail in my hair, like up here. I had a beard.
Okay.
So it wasn't an attractive lady. perhaps we can redo it again with real.
Yeah. Look, you got a full head of hair. You got great eyebrows. You got nice cheekbones. you make a great drag queen.
Thanks. my girlfriend does she was doing like the punchline drag brunches, like she was doing
production
for them. Like
oh,
she was
so cool.
Doing the lights and the money box and all that.
Yeah. Okay.
Like all that running around stuff. And she was like, she's like, you know, I'm a singer. And they're like, yeah, but you're a girl. Get out of here. Like they, man. It was, I was like, man, hey,
like it's new era. Women can do drag too. Now anybody can do it now.
Yeah. Now they can. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm jealous of drag queens. I'm jealous, especially at Punchline, because at Punchline for the drag brunch, they have like stairs that they put in from the stage into the audience so that the drag queens can go down the stairs and collect tips.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have that for stand-ups. We don't get to go out into the audience and collect tips.
I almost want to do drag just to get booked to Punchline, dude. Punchline or Helium haven't like booked me. No. I used to get tips. Like what the thing was, like, I guess when I was younger, it was part of like the there was a tag team called the Backseat Boys. Right. And it was Johnny Cashmere and Trent Acid. And they would come out and dance. And the girls would like put money in their shorts and their pants.
All right.
We were like, I came up right as they were like almost like fading away from the company. So like, I almost like stepped into the role of like, I'm the guy who you can put money in my pants. And so me and my partner used to get people leaving money in our pants, but it wasn't anything like what drag racers, like what drag racers. I said,
yeah, more bring back tips, more. Everybody should get tips. Why not? Throw some cash at somebody that you like just on the street. Hey, you look good.
I'm a server. I live off tips. I know how that works. Yeah, man. Like I just had my orientation for Applebee's, so I'll be now serving, making living off of tips, just, you know.
All right.
The same as I was doing before. And If wrestling fans just tipped the wrestlers, I wouldn't have to go and make all those trips back and forth with mozzarella sticks and burgers.
Dollar margaritas.
Yeah. Dollaritas are back.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Yes. I definitely also wish that more tips were forthcoming in stand up. I mean, you know, I can pay a water bill with stand-up comedy sometimes.
Dude, I haven't been on stage and done stand-up in probably a year or something.
Wow.
I can't remember. I love it. I love stand-up comedy. Yeah. It scratches all the same itches that doing having wrestling matches does, except for like I get to keep all my clothes on and no one punches me. That's like my favorite part. And
you don't take a hit.
But I think that the thing is, it's just open mics are so blah, like I had to keep on going and hearing the same people do the same cringy stuff. That's not like they're not furthering their craft. They're just doing it to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like it almost seems like it's just an excuse to be indoors, you know, for some people. And and I'm like, oh man, I gotta stay here until 1 o'clock in the morning, and the crowd that will have been walked, the room has been walked by the time they get on stage. I don't even care. I don't want to do all that.
I did 2 open mics so far this week, and that was the case at both of them. Just depressing, and by the time I went up, not a lot of people left. The people who did go up, there were some real characters.
Yeah.
And a little bit of light racism too. It's really that's probably like beyond the cringe is when somebody just casually drops something racist and everybody has to be like, "All right, we have to continue to try to have a good time after that."
I think when you say light racism, you think there's a way to make racism and comedy like lighthearted racist, like it's cuz it's not racism as much as it's just like it's like just like coming at the stereotype from a way that's I think we can make some of it work.
Yeah, absolutely. You can talk about anything. You can make a joke about anything, and anything can be funny. And you can talk about race, and it can be very funny. What I'm talking about really is like sort of just clumsily like sort of inserting race into a joke just because, or just to be edgy. I mean, somebody the other day is telling a joke about how he just moved to Philadelphia and how people in Philly think they're mean, but really they're nice inside, which is like a nice, that's a cool premise. I get that. You know, you have a hard exterior and a heart of gold, what have you. But it was not, you know, I was an open mic joke, so it was not fully formed. And at some point he's just like, all right, this lady was yelling at me. And when everybody in the audience is waiting for like the flip, the turn of like, oh, but she was really nice. But there's the flip never came. It was just some lady at a bar who was yelling at him. And then he goes, and she was black for no reason. And then he looks around the room and he's like scanning, looking for black people in the audience and he just took the whole like show on into this like detour where nobody wanted to be. There was no reason for him to bring up what he brought up. It just clenched up the whole room. And we had to sit and like listen to like, another minute of that. Open mics can be psychically painful. It can hurt.
What I like about comedy is the same thing I like about pro wrestling. And this is like, it's tough for people to kind of understand unless they're like kind of in both worlds. But it's almost like you're building a craft. You're crafting this intricate show. You know, like you're doing a cool misdirect here. You're the same as if you're teasing a suplex and not doing it. You know what I mean? It's the same as if you're going to the fans and they're reacting a certain way. It's like the same as if like you're doing a callback or like anything in comedy and pro wrestling. They kind of will go together in that way. And I think as far as like the open mics are, it's like you could tell that a lot of the people who are there aren't interested in crafting it.
No, they aren't
interested in it being jokes. Like it being anything but giving them a microphone to talk to in front of people, a microphone to talk into in front of people.
That's right.
I think that's probably what helps me with doing this. Now it's like, cause I have a microphone to talk into all the time. I think it's sharpened my wrestling. It's sharpened my promos in wrestling. It's sharpened my comedy, but it takes a little bit of what the nerves used to be, like the overwhelming nerves that I used to have. Like as far as like even going back to when I used to do the sketch comedy and I would be in front of the camera with my best friend, I would be nervous back then to do all that. But I couldn't, if we were to film a sketch right now, I wouldn't be like that stuff kind of has gone a little bit away. I mean, I still get nervous before matches because, like it's a physical sport.
Sure, you should. It's like an exciting moment. I still get nervous too. It's nice.
It's weird to get nervous in a room. It's so weird. You get nervous in front of a room that has like five people in it, even more than you get nervous in like a packed building.
Sometimes, yeah, for sure. I mean, as a comedian, you know, you rely so much on sort of this timing aspect of laughter. You know, you want the laughter to start and to persist, for people to laugh so you can sort of dovetail into your next thing, and it's this very sort of almost choreographed kind of a thing. And when you only have like, you know, three or four people in the crowd, and you know, even if they're having a pretty good time, it can feel like it's going very fast because you don't get that sort of rolling, you know, reaction. You know, so you had to sort of play much more intensely and tighter because you can't kind of relax into the laughter of it. You know, if you're playing for 300 people, you can kind of take your time because you hit a punchline and some people over here get it first and some people over here get it next. And then somebody in the back laughs like an idiot. And then somebody else laughs at that. And, you know, then you're working up this whole little, you know, bubbling cauldron or something.
Chain reaction. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that just, you know, you can only do that with more than, you know, five or six people, but which isn't to say that it can't be, it can be a lot of fun. It can be a lot of fun with a small crowd, you know?
Is there anything brand new that you're working on that you said you went to two mics this week already? What What's any new stuff you want to talk about? You want to work on? You want to tell me about?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and it's real life stuff. I went to the doctor recently and I got a checkup, and it had been a long time since I gotten a checkup, and I got a bunch of blood work and STI testing and HIV testing because it had been a long time. And even though I don't take a lot of risks, I do take some. So I wasn't, you know, having grown up in the 90s, HIV is probably one of the scariest things that exists in my psyche, just for being, having been gay at that time. And it was HIV was a death sentence then. So
you were gay then. Still are, but you were then too.
That's right. So I was really scared. I was really scared to get this HIV test, and I didn't want to do it. So after that happened, I started just going on stage and talking about that, and talking about how nervous I was about the HIV test and how compassionate my doctor was. And since my doctor was so compassionate, he went ahead and hid that HIV test in a piece of cheese for me. And
that's the part where the people are supposed to laugh.
Still working on the rhythm of it, the delivery of it, and building out. Yeah, so just talking about that, I had to, I was really happy when I tested negative. So I went to Nate, my roommate, and I was like, I have great news. Let's celebrate. And I told him what the news was. He was like, that's not good news. That's just not bad news. And he didn't see the point of feeling good about it, because to him, you know, why would I have tested, positive, because I'm such a, an incel. I never get laid. It never happens for me. So so I had to start revealing secrets. Like, well, you didn't know this, but in 2019, I did all this stuff that I successfully kept the secret and in, my little inner sanctum. And I just had to convince him that, that I was, a badass, that I had been promiscuous. And that just, that dovetails into, I had to lie to the government to get my monkeypox vaccine. Because at the time, you could only get the vaccine if you were sleeping with random people, if you were a gay guy who was sleeping around. And I, wasn't, but I still wanted the vaccine. So I lied. I don't think you can go to jail for that, For monkeypox. Yeah. You could not get the vaccine was limited supplies, because supply of everything is so messed up these days, but they had limited supplies of the vaccine. So that in order to cut down on the people who could sort of access it, they had this requirement that you had to, have multiple partners, or had a recent partner in the last 2 weeks that you didn't know before. It's some song and dance that you had to attest to. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I did, because I don't want to get monkeypox, because they said it feels like broken glass in your beehole. In your beehole. Yeah. That's where the monkeypox lives.
I don't know anything about monkeypox. I know about chickenpox, and I know about smallpox, and I know about Tupac.
Bing, 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 bing. Yeah, monkeypox, came at the sort of during the pandemic, monkeypox hit the gay community in New York City very hard. And it was this thing of, you develop these sores in your little, in your coolie hole. And they are apparently extremely uncomfortable and very painful. So as much as I was not.
Where did monkey come from, though, on that?
I don't know. Why chicken pox? Why smallpox?
Monkey. Because it happens to you if you're a chimpanzee.
Did you just come up with that? Yeah. You need to do more stand-up. That was chimpanzee. Oh my gosh. I can't even match that. Oh, I'm gonna have to
have it. Use it. I'm cool with that.
So yeah, that's what I've been just working on all that, trying to sort of tie in all this sort of medical stuff that's real life with just dumb jokes, and trying to sort of approach this topic in a way that's humorous, because it's serious. It's not a joke that I was nervous about taking an HIV test. It's not a joke that I was nervous about going to the doctor. All that stuff is real, but I'm trying to translate it into material.
Mm-hmm. I thought of a sketch idea.
Uh-huh.
The other day.
So tell me.
Think about the song Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Okay.
And then I started
classic
imagining. I started imagining a stripper like in Flashdance, where she leans down and pulls a cord, and all this sugar actually pours out. Pour some actual sugar on me.
I can't believe that hasn't happened already.
What did you say?
I just can't believe that we haven't already seen that. We haven't seen somebody. See, everyone's mind is a unique creature. I think that would be very funny. Yeah, just a ton of of granular sugar just falling down.
Very. We would have taken songs and make videos that are very like literal for the song.
Oh, wait, so you think granular sugar would be funnier, or do you think sugar cubes would be funnier?
Big bag of Domino sugar just down.
Because the cubes they bounce off, and maybe that would be funny, like the little doink 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 of the sugar cubes. This is something to talk about. I think we can definitely work on this.
I'm trying to think of other stuff that I'm trying to work on stuff that I haven't gone to a mic in a while, and I honestly almost want to do those less and less, because like it seems like the people who go to them aren't there to see comedy, like, and they aren't there to see you specifically. So like they'll talk right through your set, or they'll like not care, or like, and I want anybody who's listening to me to freaking care. Like,
yeah.
Why would, like, just hearing people like talk in the back and people like just not paying attention, it just kind of bothers me.
It's tough, but that's what makes it so good when you do it for people who like want to see it. You know, if you can get through that, through people ignoring you and talking in the back and all that, then it's easier when people are actually primed for it. And there is definitely something 1,000,000% to be said for just going on stage and just saying all those words and just getting those words out of you. Sometimes I like a shitty mic. I'm sorry. Can I curse? Is that?
Yeah.
Sometimes like a shitty mic because then I'm not inhibited from bombing or saying something that's not funny, or, you know, or just getting something out of my mouth and seeing how it sounds. You know, certain mics, you know, good mics, you know, where there's a lot of people and they're not comedians and they're a good audience, you know, it's more tempting to go and do A material and stuff that you know will work, because you want to please the people who are there, as opposed to doing what you really want to be doing at an open mic, which is like, is not working on A material, is working on what's not A material. And, you know, it's got to get better one way or another. And some people can just make it great on their own by themselves without a mic, but I'm definitely not one of those people. That's why I've trudged through it.
What is the thing that like offends you the most? Like, what would somebody say to you that would like automatically like be like they crossed the line and you'd have to be like, hey, I'm ending this conversation completely?
I guess if somebody called me the F slur and they meant it, yeah, that would be like it.
F slur.
Yeah, somebody called me the fag word,
the full
two syllable version with like the hard T at the end.
I say that word every day, dude.
I mean, I use it with my friends. I love that. No,
like my brother's my best friend. I hang out with him, hug him, and we're brotherly love. That's more
sure.
That's more for me on my end.
Yeah,
my brother's gay, and we just joke around all the time. Like, and my girlfriend, her family's got a lot of like, my mom's gay, my sister's gay. Like,
oh,
so,
wow.
It's not something I actually say, but I always call everything gay. Like, what are you, some kind of fag?
My brother said to me yesterday,
like, what are you, bitch?
Yeah, I think that kind of like razzing with people back and forth is fine. I'm talking about if somebody like really with deep hatred, you know, came up to me and said, you are a faggot, I think I don't know that I could control my emotions in that kind of
situation. Like MAGA but with an F.
But other than that, I mean, That's the one thing about being a stand-up too, is it's very hard to offend. You know, I've been doing this for 13 years. So I think in most scenarios, even when somebody is trying to hurt my feelings, it really doesn't register as anything other than an opportunity to sort of riff, you know. And sometimes, you know, if somebody is mad and you're not mad, it's you win, you know. So,
you know, it's okay to be offended, you know. Mm. I mean, it's okay to offend people. Like, not everybody needs to not be offended all the time. Like, I think sometimes it's pretty healthy for you to get offended and be like, what does this say about me that I'm offended by this? What is it? There might be something bigger. What's something that's been offending me a lot lately is people come up to me and they talk to me about like collegiate wrestling or like college wrestling, or amateur wrestling. And they're like, oh yeah, my cousin, he's an actual wrestler. And I'm like, fuck you, first of all. You don't ever call amateur wrestling to a pro wrestler actual wrestling. That's like,
It's such a dick move. Why even do that?
I get that you're just trying to make the words make sense to you, but if you don't have the vocabulary, don't offend me.
That's so funny. Oh yeah, so my cousin, he's a real thing. He's not fake like you. Anyway, my cousin.
Right. It's like all right. I can't get offended, and I can't really get mad at you because you're only offending me because you're an ignorant idiot.
Right.
Too stupid to think of a word that it is the actual sport. You call it the sport of wrestling. You could call it Olympic wrestling. You could call it any of those other things that it actually is. You don't have to call it actual wrestling.
Oh, people are impossible. Why do we try to please them?
I think it's all white women's fault, actually.
Is that it?
Probably.
They invented approval.
Yeah.
And subsequently disapproval.
Because it really is, it has really gone, and I think I shared this the other day. It was a Patrice O'Neill quote when he was like, have we retired sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me? Because like, people are acting like everything is, oh, I'm unsafe. I'm like, from words? what's your deal, bro? Like, If you're not feeling unsafe, maybe learn to cope with having your feelings hurt a little bit more.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. As long as those hurt feelings are going, I don't know. There's just the perspective that I'm looking at it through is like, especially as a stand-up comedian, is I am trying to cultivate a certain kind of an audience that matches my life experiences. Because, you know, you're not every audience is for every comedian, and not every audience is going to relate to, you know, what I'm talking about. You know, not every audience wants to hear a gay guy talking about getting an HIV test. Like, you know, maybe that would be a turnoff for some people. So what I run into is I'm trying to cultivate, you know, a certain kind of audience, and that audience includes people who have not traditionally been sort of let into the world of stand up, let in to sort of come and enjoy stuff. Because you know, there's so many sometimes harmful attitudes that are sort of reinforced on stage. That fat people are bad, that trans people are wrong, you know, that lesbians are. I don't even want to say anything about lesbians, but the.
No, just say as much offensive stuff. Trans people are wrong.
Right. So
fat people are bad.
So if I'm trying to cultivate an audience that includes. Fat people, that includes trans people, that includes, you know, people who just are outside of the mainstream, then I'm not going to have a great time at a show if one of the other comedians on the lineup is talking about how disgusting fat people are, or how her name was Jane but she had a dick, it takes all kinds, but in a context like that, I'm less inclined to be like, hey, you know, suck it up and move on, and everybody gets their feelings hurt, because I feel like those communities like get their feelings hurt disproportionately and are looked down on more. And so like, I'm more inclined to salvage those people's feelings, because I want those folks to feel good at a comedy show as opposed to feeling shitty. It's nuanced.
I did in my comedy journey go from like, I only want to be shocking and offensive and do comedy for joke's sake, like just to make the jokes happen. But I also then like got to the point where I would say, like, after I started doing this podcast, I got to a point where it was like, I want every other thing to be a selling point for every other thing. So like, if anybody hears me do comedy and they go, oh, that guy also has a podcast. Oh, that guy on his podcast talks about how he's a wrestler. Oh, let me check out his wrestling career. Oh, and wrestling promos, they talked about how he was in movies and stuff. Oh, let me check out his movies and stuff that he's done. And then everything goes, circles back to itself. And in my comedy, like, I think, I don't even want to say it was the beginning, but it was for sure, like, before I started doing this, I had jokes that were like maybe a little offensive, but they weren't offensive to offend. It was offensive to get a laugh. Like, it wasn't anything. It wasn't anything that would actually ever hurt anybody. That's not what I wanted to do. And I think I eventually evolved into, that's why the show is called Evolving. I evolved into, doing jokes now where I think I was doing something on stage a while back where I said, like, I was raised to accept people, not tolerate them. That's not really how things work in my family. Like how my mom's gay, my brother's gay, my sister's gay, her wife's gay. And I was, my other sister, she's been in a relationship with a black guy for the last 10 years. Like, we all just love everybody. It's not a thing about tolerating everybody. We just accept and we love everybody, except none of them like my girlfriend because she's a vegan. Where's the acceptance?
Where's the acceptance now? That's funny. That is funny. That's hilarious, actually. Thank you. But who's the black sheep of the family? Not the lesbian, not the one in the interracial relationship. It's the vegan. The vegan is the outcast.
The weird thing is, I think almost as much as, you know how like everybody when they're starting out has a bit where they talk about how people, oh, you're a comedian, make me laugh, tell me a joke. People always do that to you. I got that double time with. I got that double time with me being a pro wrestler. Then people would be like, don't hit me with the chair. Like, so the same stuff came at me in that. And on top of came at me in threes, because they would go, oh, you're the only straight male in your family. Did you have to come out of the closet as being straight? Like, I've heard that hack. That is such hacks. Like the hack trifecta.
Yeah. I
got it so much.
That's so funny.
Hack material.
That's not the kid. Nobody else in my family is gay. It's just me.
That you know of.
That part. You know of. Yeah, I've got hopes. I got a little brother. My dad is sick. My dad is 73. When he was 60, he had two more kids. Because he can do that. He can.
Mm-hmm.
The kid is 13 now. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want the kid's life to be more difficult than it has to be. But privately, I guess not. Tell me.
Think of a bit real quick. I'll let you finish. We would say like how they have like for some jobs have like term limits.
Yeah.
But with old men, they could still have babies at an older age. They don't have sperm limits.
I can't. You're just spitting fire today. You're putting me to shame. Sperm limits. I'll steal that one too.
Please.
My dad had no sperm limits. It was still good. So he had another little man. And a part of me thinks it would be funny if that kid grew up to be gay too. If my dad just never got to have like the man that he wanted to have.
Just because anyone's gay, it doesn't mean they're not a man. Like, so there are gay dudes that I know that are more of a man than me. Like, I would say, like, I was like, my male role model growing up was a gay man. And yeah. And like he was, and still is, he's still somebody I highly respect and look up to, like as somebody who is like an ideal man. And he has like great perspectives and great ways of looking at things.
All right.
And I would never. And I think my cousin came out a couple of years ago, and my uncle was like, "Oh, the Burke name is ended. My bloodline is over." And he was crying, and I was like, "Why are you making this about you? You're being such a faggot." Like, I didn't, like
that's fun. Turn it around on him.
So, like it doesn't mean he's still a man. He still works hard, and he still makes wise decisions in this life, and has nothing to do with like where your wiener goes. Mm-mm. Your wiener can go wherever you want your wiener to go. Stop trying to police people's genitals.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Free the genitals. I started this show. I started doing it in 2017, and around the time when I started it, my mom had saved these voicemails that she got from her mom who had passed and her best friend who had passed, and she said to me, like, you know how like when people die, you kind of forget what their voice sounds like. And I remember feeling so much like I don't want that for me. Like, and I made that part of like what the mission statement on the show was, because it is evolving with Corey Castle, not just because Corey Castle's my name, but if you check out what the show was like when I first started it versus what it's like now, I've done a ton of evolving, and I've learned a lot of lessons through having these conversations with guests. I say that to say that I also like to have people on to have conversations with them that are on the record, because I know this information or this conversation is perhaps going to outlive us. One of the major things I learned, like probably pretty early on in the show, was do you know who Chris Cotton is?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had two episodes that had Chris Cotton in them, and in them I'm sure to say on the record how much I loved him and how much to me he was a star, and he was important, and I'm glad I know him, and I'm happy to watch his growth and all that kind of stuff, and hear him talk about his wife and all that stuff, and then like now he's gone, you know. I go back now and listen to that stuff and hear him returning those things to me, like saying like, "Corey, I love you, brother," like that kind of stuff. It all like, so to me it wound up being more of not just like I have to have this this flock of a following, but I need to have like this legacy, you know what I mean? I want this to build a legacy. So I say that to say on the record I'm pleased to be your friend now. This is the longest conversation we've ever had.
Oh yeah.
I hope you keep doing these. I'm looking forward to what the future of our friendship is.
Me too. Yeah, we're gonna write some jokes for each other.
I love it. Yeah. I wanna say, man, please don't ever hesitate to make, if you ever need me to be a resource for anything, if there's ever anything that goes on or you just need some judgment-free conversation, just need a friend. Don't ever feel alone. Don't ever feel like you don't have somebody that you can reach out to. You have my phone number. You have my Facebook. You have my Instagram. All that stuff. You have everything. Just reach out to me if you ever feel like, you know, you need to talk about anything.
Well, that means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm so psyched about the on the record part of it. I also want to say, like, while we're on the record, if there's anything you wanted to ask me, anything that you wanted to say to me, this be your time to do it.
Well, how do you know my roommate Nate? I forget.
Comedy.
Oh.
Comedy. Comedy. he did an episode of my podcast before the pandemic, before the lockdown.
Wow.
It was he He came over. I think it might have just started, maybe. I don't really remember. It's like it's such a blur. Like the time frame, it's hard to track.
Yeah, I can never remember where I met comedians that I've known for years and years and years. I don't remember the first meetings almost ever.
Right. Well. So I like to play this game. We usually start wrapping it up. I just have a couple more things, and I'll send you off into the sunset with a hot dog and a handshake. This part I like to call audio time travel, right? Like, mm-hmm. so like we just discussed, this information, this conversation, this video, this audio is outliving us, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know, it's going to live forever. You know, like they say, everything on the internet lives forever. So it's going to continue on. So let's say in 2043, someone comes across this recording and you're speaking directly to them in a time capsule type way. Give them inspirational messages from this version of you, this time frame, this 2023, the 2023. What are the next things you say are the things you're speaking directly to the future people who love you the most, who stumble across this? What are you saying?
Oh my gosh. Well, I hope you have air that you can breathe and water that you can drink to start, because I'm not so sure that that's going to be available. And if all that stuff is okay, and we somehow have not eliminated all of the wildlife in the oceans, and you're not, you know, I don't know, crawling across a parched landscape, then I'm happy for you. I that means that we've fixed a few things. So, if I'm talking to somebody in 2043, then, and they're there to listen to it, then I'm very pleasantly surprised. And thank you for tuning in to this podcast while you try to find fresh drinking water. I don't know that I could give somebody in the future any kind of advice whatsoever. I feel like things are going to be harder exponentially. But if you are doing stand-up comedy, the one tip that I will give you that will always be evergreen is half of it, just like most things, is sticking around. And if you stick with something and you don't quit, then those opportunities will always find you. So never quit. That's my advice.
Stay hopeful.
Yeah.
Stay hopeful.
Absolutely.
That the world is going to survive another 20 years. Yeah. I think it will, man. I think about what 20 years ago was like versus what it's like now, and how much the world has evolved, how much growth has happened. Like, we now have all the world's information in this magical box in our pocket. Like, you could have never imagined that.
Sure. You never
could have imagined that like 20 years ago. So who knows what's going to be possible at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I would love, I'll be 63. I'll be ready to retire. So if there's a world to retire in, I'll be happy about that too.
What if you say, if you talk about how in 20 years you'll be 63, and then it'll be time for you to hire a home nurses to come out and take care of you, and then you'll be like, finally, as a 63-year-old gay man, I'm looking forward to having AIDS.
Yo, all right, you know what, I'll give you 10%. I'll give you 10%. You got to come on as my writer. 10% of all my drink tickets. You can have them. That's good.
What's something that you've never been asked in a podcast as being a guest on podcast that you've always wanted to be asked?
I don't know. There's nothing that I've always wanted to be asked out. There's all these gay people that, maybe you can hook me up.
Yeah, man. We can be brothers, man.
Yeah, matchmaker. Help me out.
So just in pretending that hypothetically, this is the way we wrap it up. I say, hypothetically, I've gifted you this show. This is your first episode of your brand new podcast, Evolving with Alejandro Morales. In a very Jerry Springer's final thought type of way, the most valuable takeaways and the most important parts that could inspire people to be a better version of themselves tomorrow as they are today? What would you say?
I would say take care of yourself. Take care of your body. Do not do what I do. Do not put off going to the doctor for years and years and years, because you create this huge specter of the horrible things that are possible and you don't realize that actually wonderful things are possible. If you just face your fear, and then it's not so bad, and then you move on, and then you get to live, and then maybe write some jokes about it.
Let's certainly do like a joke writing session one of these days. We're going to just have a call where we're just writing jokes with each other. I'm really into that. It'll be fun.
Sperm limits.
Do you do any? I'm sorry, say that again.
Sperm limits.
Yeah, I mean, it all ties together. The 63-year-old having kids, but also having home nurses.
Yeah.
It all makes sense. Do you do any impressions?
I used to do a Seth Rogen, but that's just like, ho, 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 ho. That's my Seth Rogen impression. That's it.
Dude, the podcast that I just did, the last episode I just did, the guy said Seth Rogen, and he did impression of Seth Rogen at the end of the show. So that one's taken. You got to do something else.
Oh, shoot. That's the only one I got.
In your best Seth Rogen, say how we close it out. We say, be fun, have safe, keep evolving.
Be fun, have safe, keep evolving. Can't do impressions. It's the same. You found my weakness. I can't do impressions or accents. Keep evolving. Keep evolving.
Appreciate you, man. I appreciate you so much. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for hanging with me. I hope we could do another one real soon. If this is the first time anybody's checking it out, if this is the first time you've checked out Evolving with Corey Castle, check out the archives. There's 309 other episodes that exist in this world. So check those out. If you don't have time for that, I just want to say how much I appreciate the effort, the currency that is your effort that has have you listening to us for the past hour or watching us or consuming us in any way. I appreciate you. Make sure you remember to just stay kind. Stay kind to yourself. Stay kind to everybody. Everybody deserves just as much unconditional love as you give yourself. So think about that when you think about yourself and how much grace you give yourself. Be fun. Have safe. Keep evolving.
Show's over.